time for Blindly Obvious.
Hello and welcome to Blindly Obvious. I'm Tyler with my co-host Jeff. And today we are talking the conversation of dealing with difficult people. Now, not only are we going to be talking that today, we do also have a special guest with us, which is Jeff's brother Dave, who happens to be just a little bit of an expert in dealing with difficult people. Probably because he's one himself. I can't say that. I just know Jeff, so I'll speak on his behalf. Now, I know many of us just finished up, the Thanksgiving season and the times of getting together with family, so thought this may be the perfect time to worry about how to deal with those difficult people. And maybe in some cases you may find that the difficult person is just that, you. Jeff, what do you think?
Didn't we do a podcast, Trouble Has a U in It?
We did. We did indeed.
And I think that's one of our problems is you are very keenly aware of everybody else's idiosyncrasies and you're oblivious to your own.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about that on the phone the other day.
I think this morning too, wasn't it? We were talking and you said you can only be around people so long.
Oh, yeah.
See?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a me, but I recognize that that's a me thing, so I'm not close enough, am I?
No.
I have a hard time being around certain people for very long. There's little things about them that start to bother me, and these people are my friends, but I have to, like, distance myself for a little while because there's little things about everyone, and I'm sure I've got my little things too, and I know that, but I got to pull away from that person. And I'll be honest, like, Jeff's one of those people. I can only take Jeff in small doses.
You got to take him like a shot.
You know, because he can be really...
Is he kind of like Jack Daniels or a vodka?
He can be really overbearing. Yeah. You know, like, he can be a bit much sometimes. And you're just like, yeah, that's Jeff.
Oh, that's Jack Daniels.
Yeah. But that's how I am. It's like, but I know that's probably just a me thing. But at least I'm aware of that, you know? Because I think we all can be difficult people.
So you'd rather step away from somebody and separate a little bit.
Yeah.
Cool off rather than dealing with somebody constantly and then have a little blow up.
Yeah, and it's not that I'm angry.
Some inconspicuous or insignificant reason.
Yeah, it's not that I'm angry with them. It's just that, like, okay, man, I'm kind of tired of talking about that. And you know how Jeff can be. He can get on a subject and it's just driving it into the ground.
That's actually probably why him and I get along. We're both like, hey, let's see how else we could beat this thing up.
Let's rehash it. Kick the horse a few more times.
Turn it over and see if there's any juice to cook on the other side.
So that's what I'm talking. That's kind of an example. I guess you're looking for honesty. That's about as honest as you're going to get. But that's me. Is I'm like, I can't be around that person for at least a day or two, you know, or even like... You know, even talk to him on the phone. It's like, dude, I need to be away from that person for a little bit, you know. And it's not usually Jeff. I mean, most of the stuff, I accept that. You know, that's how he is.
It's his dog. It's his kids.
Oh, his dog? Oh, don't even get me started. But yeah, so what he's talking about, though, is like my kind of little thing is if I'm around someone too much, I do begin to like pick them apart. You know, and then if I take it far enough, I might even start to be like, I really don't like this person that much, you know, like, but that's not true, you know, but
yep.
Like,
you're telling yourself that in the moment.
Yeah.
I think we probably all kind of do that in some way, shape or form.
Well, again, we're difficult people.
Yeah.
That's all true.
Of us are. We are. And it's something, it's kind of hard to admit that we've all got this little difficult person inside of us that we're sometimes not even wrestling with.
Dave, you actually have some experience in working with what I would say society deems as difficult people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people who have been sent to prison for one reason or another. And maybe sometimes you see cases of, you know, rehabilitation. And sometimes you see cases of them spending the rest of their lives there.
Yeah.
And you know, what was your experience like with that?
Well, you know, you treat each case differently. But some of the strongest relationships I've ever had is with difficult people. those kids, some of the strongest bonds that I've ever created were through difficult situations. So there's something to be said about difficult people and what they bring to a relationship. Just because a person is difficult doesn't mean you can't grow close to them.
Or that they have nothing to offer. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, and oftentimes, would you say many of those, I mean, I know you just said kids there, in those circumstances, would you really say they're as much difficult people as they are most likely coming from extremely difficult situations, and that's all they've ever known?
Yeah, I think we are products of our environment. That's what I've learned at that place. What you are surrounded with, you'll become. And so I think a lot of where, how we become difficult people was either in the household when we grew up, how we were raised, or the people you surround yourself with. And, you know, I think that plays into it more than anything else.
Sure. I mean, I could, and you know, in my own life growing up, I was kind of, I have two, a half brother and a half sister, but they're both much older than me. So it was just pretty much just me around the house growing up. And I pretty much had, you know, everything I ever wanted and then some. So I think for me as a young adult, a difficult trait of mine was having everything I've ever wanted. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's not how it goes in life.
Yeah.
Just simply isn't. So it's, you know, sure, that sounds like a first world problem, and it most definitely is, but it's an adjustment to, no, you know, you can't always get what you want. You know, like we always talk about music on the show, the Rolling Stones, they say you can't always get what you want. And that's a true statement.
I don't know. I guess the most difficult part of that job, and I can say this now because I don't work there anymore, but was the people that I worked with.
So like the other members of the staff itself.
Yeah. I was not friendly with anyone outside of my cottage. So the direct four people that on our team that I worked with, I was close with them, but that was it. Because the rest of the people there drove me crazy.
And, for any reason specifically or just?
It was like still being in high school. I mean, they were more drama than the kids were. The kids, you knew you were going in there. You expected them to be the way that they
were. Sure, they're here obviously for this reason.
But the staff that were working is like,
you would think, hey, you guys are here to help these people get better. And you need help getting
You're part
better.
Of the problem. Yeah.
Okay.
So that was what that, if I had to pinpoint one of the reasons, the biggest reason I left there was because of the staff, not the kids. I could have continued to work with those kids for years on end if it was the right environment.
So if there was a, during your time at this, you know, at this prison facility and the time you spent, what, 2-3 years there?
17 years.
Just a couple.
So literally five times what I'm thinking. Okay. Yeah. So during this time, did you have, you know, one moment or one person maybe ever, or just a situation you dealt with that really changed your perspective for the better, or gave you a viewpoint of, you know, like all hope isn't lost per se, or, you know, these children can come into this facility and they can leave a much better person than what they came in, and they can make a real positive difference in society.
Yeah, there is a boy there. He first got there when he was, I want to say he was like 13. He was there for about 2.5 years. And I got really close with this kid. You know, and I he looked at me like his dad, because he grew up in a foster home, and he's around Columbus area, you know, and
sure. So his entire life, you know, mischief or mishap was probably directly related to the fact of he was looking for a father figure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he kind of picked me, I guess, and we got really close. I got to be careful not to say his name, but, you know, but what he was able to do was to help kind of humanize some of these boys, you know, because to me, when I first started working there, the things that they had done, no human being should ever be on the receiving end of. Once you get past this, but this kid helped me to see that they're human and that they really were products of their environment, you know, and that this boy could, because I'll tell all the other staff were like, we can't stand this kid. He's a snake in the grass. We don't like him. And I was like, no, I guarantee you that he is going to turn out as a success, and I'm going to make sure that he does. And over the next 2 years, we got really close. And what's crazy is he's the only kid from there that I have kept in contact with. I was just on the phone with him about a month ago.
Awesome.
And he wants to get together.
And still doing good to this day.
Oh, he's married. He's got two kids. He's got a good job. But yeah, he wants to meet my wife and he wants to meet my kids. And I feel totally comfortable doing that.
Sure.
You know?
From the outside looking in, it seems to me what you ended up being was what most parents should be. It's the person making the investment in this child.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's a man now, probably, right? Or
yeah,
close
yeah,
to it.
Yeah.
But you became that, not only a father figure, but that person who nurtured in this individual what was lacking due to his environment he grew up in.
How often do you see the kids kind of act out because they're just lacking, almost, I would even say, looking for discipline, just some structure?
Well, I can actually speak to that from personal experience. But okay. I grew up, like, when I was his age, I was sent away to a treatment facility, a behavioral treatment facility. And I can't tell you how many times that I would get sent to the timeout room or get restrained for some attention, you know, even if it was negative attention, it was something.
Attention.
Yeah. And that was, and what's crazy about society today and what I'm finding out more and more, even with my own kids, is that the people who aren't difficult, the people who are well-behaved or whatever, they get left out. It's the people that are the loudest and the most negative that get paid the most attention to.
It's today's society.
We forget them.
It's almost in society. I feel like today we've started to reward bad behavior versus rewarding good behavior. So I would concur with that.
For instance, like if I was at that facility, the one I was personally in. So one of the privileges was to be able to go outside and walk around the track. Now, I was never allowed outside for most of the time I was there because I was just that bad. But I would go off so much, they would agree to take me out for a walk and let me walk around because they couldn't control me. So I was rewarded, and all these other kids that had to earn that privilege are watching me do that. So what does that communicate to them? And I think as a society overall, that's what we've done. We've rewarded bad behavior, and it's the people who are the loudest that get the most attention, that get the most privileges.
If it's super bad, we'll make an exception.
Yeah, I made another mistake when I was about 19, and I ended up in a jail cell, and it was the most sobering. That was a life-changing experience for me. I was arrested for trespassing. I spent a couple days, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple days in jail. At the stockade where you actually do time. And I didn't want to call my parents or anything, but before they sent me to the stockade, it was the most surreal experience I've ever had. I mean, you walk into there and it's not like the movies, you know, that they make it out like, you know, it's not as bad as they make it out to be.
Not our jail in Fort Myers.
Yeah. But,
is it still there?
I'm sure it is. It's Lee County Stockade.
I was just talking about with Hurricane Ian.
I don't know. Yeah.
They rebuilt it.
They got it at this point.
They kind of need it there. But my point is like, I remember specifically when they were putting us, when they were moving you from county to the stockade, I was originally wearing an orange jumpsuit. And then when they're moving you to the stockade, they put you in a blue jumpsuit. And all these homeless people are in there and they're like, put me in my blues, you know? And what that meant is you were getting moved out to the stockade, you get TV, free meals, a bed, you know? And so
people those guys were going, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People would go and go pee on the street or something so they could get arrested and thrown in prison. They wanted to be there.
You get showers.
Yeah. You get showers and
controlled environment of, you know, climate.
Mm-hmm.
So again, that's rewarding that behavior, and at the expense of what? The rest of us.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're exactly right. I think it's one of those, the attempt to do good, because I think many of these plans and policies and efforts, in many cases, a lot of people were, I don't know that they necessarily were created with good intentions, but many of us believed these policies were going to serve good intention. And I think now we're kind of starting to see, like I said, the ill effects of maybe they're not as good as, you know, what we once thought they were.
That's a great point, because if you think about this, most people, short of their vacation, aren't cognizant of the coming months.
Sure. Well, the other reason they're, you know, planning their vacation ahead is because you got to pay for it.
Right.
Most people don't think months ahead. They think maybe a week.
You don't want to miss it, or your boss requires it so they can plan to fill that spot, right?
Yep.
But we're not thinking down the road of whether it's our plan or even the leadership that we're under, what is their long range plan? What's the end game of what they're aiming at?
Sure. Maybe I make this decision today. What is the implications of said decision going to be in 12 months,
I 24 think
months, 36 months?
Very few thoughts or very few people thinking, but I bet you if we did, we probably wouldn't be happy with the destination.
That's a fair point. Well, and you know, there's so much noise that when you're caught up in the noise riding the hamster, it's hard to look around ahead of time because you're so distracted by all the pretty bright stuff in front of you.
Well, there's I hate to say it, but there's financial incentive in place for these people who are steering us to our demise.
Yeah.
Like they're benefiting by the chaos. And there's something about that, you know, there's control through chaos. You get to establish a preferred order by allowing or even enabling or encouraging or causing chaos.
I know I've said this before, but I feel like if we just flipped the structural pyramid back right side up from upside down.
You mean we the people?
Yeah, that is what I mean. The takers of action need to be those who are impacted by the actions.
Trouble's got a U in it. Mm-hmm. Difficult people.
That has our topic.
It's us, right? Is that we're kind of kept people in this. We like being cared for. We like just having our little feeling of control of our things that we want to control and leaving the rest of the worry to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Or at least we feel like we control those few little things. I can at least dictate how this happens.
We have enough control of our little aquarium that we feel like we've got, you know, things under wraps.
Mm-hmm. And then along comes the big hurricane and shakes up the aquarium, and you realize you had nothing under wraps.
Or they're emptying our fishbowl, and we're like, hey, what are you doing, buddy?
I kind of need that water to survive.
Yeah.
I remember when I was leaving that last job, they were trying to make this shift from the top. We had a new CEO the last 4 or 5 years that I was there, and he came in, that's one of the reasons I left, because I didn't believe they believed in the mission statement anymore. It was more about money.
Mm.
And so I had a hard time with that, because that's why I lasted so long, because I love those kids.
Sure.
One of the things they started doing is we were in a union there, and they wanted to get rid of the union. They never do anything without a plan. And this is on a small scale. I was like, they had all these town meetings and they're meeting with all the employees I'm like, what's really going on?
So here? You're thinking like these guys didn't just wake up on a Tuesday and decide, you know what, we should disunionize.
They had been planning this for a couple years, come to find out. Now, I had access to things I shouldn't have. I was friends with a lot of supervisors who were in the know, and they were kind of filling me in. And so I can say this now because I really don't care. I don't work there anymore and I don't have anything they owe me. Basically they were going around trying to get rid of the union so that they could, work the workers that were working there to death.
Mm.
They were trying to convince them because they could only work us a certain amount of hours.
So they wanted their basically unknowing consent.
Yeah.
To say, yeah,
so
let's
they
do
were
it.
Talking about how great the program would be. We'll bring in help that aren't union employees, and if we could just get rid of the union, you'll have all the workers in the cottage that you'll need. And we had counties that were refusing to send us kids because we weren't supervising them properly.
So there's no oversight now.
Yeah. And so they were trying to get rid of all these the union there. And so what I ended up doing is I went to all the town meetings and I acted rather indifferent. I had conversations with kind of high up people, leading them to believe. Now, I never said it, but I led them to believe that I really didn't care about the union. So they just felt comfortable telling me things.
Mm-hmm.
And come to find out, like, as I sat there and continued, they would see me talking to people on grounds because everyone was talking about it. And they were asking me, because I'd been there the longest. They're like, what do you think we should do? And I'm like, I think you should absolutely keep the union. I said, they're going to tear this place to the ground. Everything that we've built over the last 15 years will be gone if you get rid of the union. And so I was going, that's the conversation I was having. And then the union from the union lead guy, Pavoni, I think was his name. He called me and he said, hey, I know you're not a union rep, because I refuse to be one. He said, would you mind sitting in for the vote when we have the vote whether to disband the union or not? Because what I found out that the place did is they hired a child care worker, a child care professional, and immediately bumped in the supervisor. And I was like, wait, that's weird. And so this guy was actually one, he got through his training. So he did his 3 months. And then all of a sudden he's like, we should get rid of the unions.
So he was the operative basically sent him to the job.
Yeah. Okay. And come to find out he was like
the hatchet,
the nephew of one of the higher ups. And so his eventual goal was to get out of the child care to become one of the higher ups. But in the process, let's get rid of the union. And all we needed was someone a union member.
He was the dummy to go in and basically remove
the
union.
And everyone hated him because of that. But I ended up, they all thought that I was, totally for getting rid of the union. And what ends up happening is I show up that they didn't know who was going to be there for the union to count the votes. Who knows if they were actually going to fudge the votes. You know, they might have been planning it.
Are you talking about our country? Or are you talking
about
your
about the place that I worked? I showed up and they were like, "You."
They don't do that.
No.
That's the kind of thing that happens in Venezuela. They were so mad at me.
Where we're getting oil from now.
Yeah, they were so mad at me, but that's what I kept telling everyone. I said, "Look, I know I'm leaving here in less than a year, but you're going to still be here and you're going to be still working here and you're going to want the union." I said, "I won't be here, so it doesn't matter to me. If you voted out, that's on you." It wasn't even close. They voted to keep the union. They were so mad at me. You're kind of talking about trying to tear things down to, you know, do that's what they were trying to do on mm-hmm. a small scale. So can you imagine?
Yep.
The corruption.
Oh my goodness. It's the same game played over and over and yeah. over again. And,
well, and you take these, for me, the first sign of a company that's about to make a major directional shift is when you're hiring, especially if you're a major company, you're hiring a CEO from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Because why would you not want somebody
yeah.
who is within the walls of what you're building and experiencing every single day?
Who knows that corporation,
exactly.
knows the system.
How are you going to pull somebody who's, I'm not saying they're not intelligent, of course they are. They're applying yeah. for the position of CEO. But how could they come into this company that they've never worked with any of these people, they never mm-hmm. have any of this experience, and take this company and run it exactly as it was?
Yeah, he was a businessman from New Hampshire, I think.
Well, I think
this new guy came in, it was just, no.
I think you see now everything has become corporatized. But yeah. back in the day, our founders, many of them were very wealthy. But yeah. they use their golden years to build the legacy of what now we're destroying. Like all those people came, they used their wealth to make a difference for the positive, and now I feel things are much different.
It's funny. It was that whole thing I made reference to. You're talking about a corporation you worked for, a business meant to enable people who are enslaved to become free. Yeah. It's like, I think, oh, there's our country. You talk about a rigged system. There's our country. You talk about like an exploited system. You talk about they've got to destroy the union, our 50 states. I mean, I'm looking at all this stuff, how they even foment on our news stations and so forth, disunity and try and divide us by race or by party. Or
but how are things, if you were going to destroy something, how are things ultimately destroyed? They're destroyed from within.
Yeah.
So if you look at where do all of the destruction starts from these big mega, all of these corporations are the shining pillars. Well, they once were the shining pillars and architecture and structure and all the things that were built here were once, you know, the shining light on the hill. And now they've all been changed.
I think they don't want us to come together. I think that there's benefit for them in creating disunity because, again, they get to align us according to their new value system.
What's that expression? United we stand and divided yeah. we fall? And here's massive division, and it kind of feels like we are rapidly declining.
How many people do you know that still know what the Pledge of Allegiance is? I don't know too many. I know yeah. they don't do it in school anymore.
That's crazy.
But what does
you mean children? You mean children, right? You
mean I mean
kids.
Even adults. Oh. They've forgotten.
Wow.
I think
indivisible, under God, you know, they, and yep. they tried to take that stuff out. They stopped doing it. You know, I mean, they don't do it in school anymore. I don't know too many people that could. I don't think I even know it, if I'm being honest. I pledge
Let's
allegiance
see.
To
the
flag
of the United States of America, to the Republic.
Well, wait, to the what? I'm sorry. I lived there. And to the...
And
to the democracy.
Oh, for which it stands.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty.
So we justice, do know. And for all. No, it's for some. Liberty and justice wow. for some.
So we do know it, but how many people do you know that could actually... I don't know, man. You know,
think about those words when you actually stop yeah. and recite them.
Here's the scarier part.
How brilliant they really are.
We can't remember it, and so they're able to change it, and we're no longer living according to that old pledge.
Yeah.
What I see that kind of seems to preserve us in times of stress and difficulty, whether you're talking an individual and their family when they're losing their job, or you're talking about a country that is going into a financial crisis, what seems to restrain evil, what people default to, whether you're talking about criminals or whatever, there's a moral code that they all agree upon. It's funny, even in prisons, they have one. And that is what seems to restrain. And look at what they're doing. And we're not talking just our country, but across the globe, they're attacking the value systems that in the end restrain evil and keep us redirected to chaos and evil.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like you said yesterday, moving those ancient
boundary stones.
Yeah, boundary stones, yeah. Exactly.
I heard it's an old, I want to say back in the 80s, they had this communist, former communist, who was revealing the plan to take down America, and that the first place they wanted to attack was the church, where our country, which was once a Christian nation, got its values from. So they had to remove and destroy that.
Sure. Well, when you fog up that value system and you make, you know, and you lose that ability of discernment, look how, you know, in my own experience, I can say 100%, it's so easy to go astray.
Right.
Because it all sounds so good, but then it never is.
Well, when you remove those values, anything goes. It's whatever you want. Whatever you say is right, is right. And the biggest, strongest person, that's who is right. And,
I kind of think of like a little metaphor here of you get like a big bag of chips. You're, oh, that looks pretty good. Some nice nachos. And you open it up and 3/4 of it's just air that just blows out of the bag the moment you open it. That's kind of how I feel like we always get treated on these different policies is, oh, it's right. And then
they upsell the package
every time.
And then you
overpromise, under deliver.
Yeah. And you open it and you're like, whoa, where'd my product go?
Exactly.
Where'd the promises go that you gave me?
I'm sitting here listening to what you're saying, like, especially with the kids, but like people our age and the people younger than us don't have the same life experience that we've had. And what happens when we're out of the picture? Because they don't have these life experiences to fall back on when, you know, when I was a kid, this is how things were done. Or, you know, what happens when that day shows up where we literally don't know what the national anthem was anymore.
The millennial generation is probably the last one that would have half of life before this new era of what we're living through.
Wow, you that broke my heart, because the whole thing that you just said is... Don't you see, for millennia, generationally, there have been value systems, there have been skill sets, there have been conversations that were had around dinner tables, discipline.
Millennials were the last
all these
ones.
Things. Think about that. Isn't that crazy? You're absolutely right.
And do you know a competent millennial?
There's a couple. Yeah, there's a couple. But the point is, it's not the norm.
Yeah.
You know, they're outliers.
The millennials I know that are competent, they say, do not call me a millennial.
Well, they're... Tiny.
I guess I mean, in what term? Like, how old are you talking?
Well, even someone who's, you know, 28, 29.
Okay, that'd be me. That's like my age.
Yeah. They don't want to be identified with that generation.
What you're saying is the normal traits, like a dog barks, like... There's certain traits of millennials. Like I showed you the video of the job interview.
Like, yeah, so whatever. And
yeah, and that's what I see. When I hear the word millennial, that's exactly what I think of.
They may say that is a characteristic of my generation, but, and they distance themselves from those traits like we do with Generation X. And
I kind of feel like, and I was just going to say that, maybe I feel like it's the generation below us that is like that, but maybe it's the millennial. Maybe it's
I do think it's getting worse, because
me too. Maybe it started with the millennials in a big way, and then now is
I'd say it started with the millennials, but whatever this generation is called, Z or whatever,
Generation Z, I think.
Yeah, they've taken it to the complete next step.
Well,
isn't there one in between there too, or no?
I don't even know.
Did they take it, or were they taken there?
I think they were taken there.
And that's the whole, it's I would consider myself a pretty perceptive person. And until you said that, I was like, wait a second, dude, that's what broke my heart. And it's like, no, really what they have, I mean, we're in a time, and we all do it. We're X, you're millennial, and even Z does this. When you've got a question now, you want to build something, do something, understand something, where do we go? We don't talk to our grandfather or our parent.
The internet.
We look it up.
That guy doesn't know anything.
So our collective consciousness is whatever has been fed into the system.
Mm-hmm.
And who's controlling what's allowed to be in the system? You see it's like, whoa, they're building a whole consciousness that is only what they want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be devoid of all the things that we've said have led to a constructive, beautiful culture that we call America.
It used to be once was the shining light on the hill. Crazy, isn't it? But I think, I guess the thing that I like about the millennial generation, I would say, for as much negative things are about it, we were right in the midst of the infancies of technology, as well as we saw life before everybody was born with a smartphone.
Yeah. Mm.
So I think that plays a huge piece of, we saw these things rolled out onto the, you know, rolled out onto the circuit and what they're, all right, here's the first one. And then it changes into this and now it's into that. And for you guys, it was probably always something just kind of like mystical, futuristic, because you just grew up not having that. Right.
Yeah.
To where now we're at the point where people are growing up without not having it. You're born with it pretty much.
Yeah. I was sitting there just in my sermon last week. I was talking about how, you know, if you would have went, you remember the old black Nokias that they first came out with, you know, if you went back to 2001 or whenever those were out, 2000, and you just said, hey, in 20 years, you'll be able to deposit your check from your workplace
by taking
a picture on your phone. They'd look at you like you were crazy.
Well, 2 years from now, they're going to think you're crazy talking about a check.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that'll just be a thing of the past.
Yeah. And so part of me wonders if the failure, if we're going to call the millennial generation Z, okay, let's just call, if we're going to say generation Z was a failure, then we have to on some level recognize that the millennial generation failed them. And then we have to on some level recognize that generation X failed, or whoever was before that.
Look at how many little kids right now are being raised by grandparents or one parent, or there's no doubt we in society have. I think it's absolutely unfair to say that we've failed an entire generation per se, because I think there's good things that come out of everything at the end of ultimately, but
it's a slow chipping away.
Oh yeah. I think at this point it's beyond even slow. It's definitely moving fast. I would agree with that.
I'm struggling. Listen, I'm so conflicted here. We all want to blame somebody other than ourselves, but just with what we've been just now talking about, we've all kind of had some discovery in connecting of dots. Mm-hmm. And don't you think maybe possibly it's not a generational fault as much as it's been a vulnerability that was taken advantage of? And what I mean by that is this, as we just talked about your illustration with the bag of chips, we've been promised X, but we were given Y, and all we got was a bunch of air in the bag.
Overpromised, underdelivered.
Isn't that pretty much what we call product placement? Whether you're talking an actual product or a societal system, say communism versus Marxism versus capitalism, I don't know what all the systems that exist, but you know, each one's got its own utopia idea to it, that it can create prosperity and so forth, but none of them fully deliver. Not this side of eternity.
Maybe it's just that. It's the shortcomings of man.
That we're always taking advantage of not only a situation, but others for the sake of control.
Or even the fact of, even if we shrink it down into our own lives, do we ever overpromise and underdeliver?
All the time.
Yeah.
I don't want to say, that's what I hate to say this, but we do it every Christmas, don't we? We wrap the presents and, and the kid up with a package of socks, you know?
Like,
the best part was the wrapper.
So if from the top down, we've got all these different policies or issues or whatever, and we're all difficult people, how do we fix this? And I think that not the way they say it, you know, but love is what's missing.
And we've taken God out of pretty much everything, but God is love. So you're right.
You know, I know they say love everyone no matter what and all this. We should love people, but...
doesn't mean we accept their choices at the same time.
But I think that I had this genuine... I'm pulling for the underdog, you know, and... And in society today, I feel like we're so divided, as we've all just kind of, especially with COVID and everything, we sat there and we all became introverts to the point where we're not allowed to share our thoughts anymore. So how do we fix that? You know, I mean, like if we've forgotten how to socialize and empathize with each other, because that's, to answer your question, it was having empathy and love mm-hmm. towards these people is what, you know, brought me to that point where I want to help people, but it's almost become socially unacceptable or socially awkward. There are people in my church that don't even know how to have a conversation. So how do we fix this? We've got the people up top that are making all these decisions, and then we're just like, yeah, but how are we going to come together if we can't even talk to each other?
I think myself personally, being no expert, I would say just taking in the acknowledgement of knowing that I myself am difficult. So being able to take a step back in times of feeling, wow, this other person's really difficult, and having the understanding of knowing, you know, that sometimes the shoe's on the other foot, I think will make a difference in maybe not having those insignificant blow-ups with, you know, your loved ones or those close to you. As always, this has been Blindly Obvious. If we can see it, you can see it too. You can visit our website at www.blindlyobvious.com, where you can catch up on past episodes, as well as learn a little bit about us. We are so happy that you're here, and hope these are just the conversations you've been looking for. If you like what you've heard, please spread the word. Peace, love, God bless.
It's Blindly Obvious, baby.